the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.
You can put it on the board.
Woo!
Here for another episode of Midwest Swing. You can find us on Twitter at Midwest Swing Pod. We are part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network, which you can find on Twitter at Zone Coverage MN. I am your host, Brandon Warren, at Brandon underscore Warren, and it's going to be a one-man production. I'm trying to do this from my home studio, quote-unquote, so we'll see how that goes. If you like our coverage at Zone Coverage and Cold Omaha, check us out, zonecoverage.com. And if you'd like to support us, go to zonecoverage.com/Amazon. It will take you to Amazon. Nothing will change about your Amazon experience, whether you use Amazon Prime, Amazon Pantry, or any of Amazon's great services, but we do get a little bit of a kickback, so you can help support Cold Omaha, you can help support Zone Coverage. We got all kinds of good stuff going on so far here in the last few weeks with the NFL draft coverage, with the Minnesota Twins getting started, the Minnesota Wild and Minnesota Timberwolves seasons ending. I suspect we'll have some Lynx coverage as well, and don't forget about Minnesota United, the MLS soccer team that just started here in the Twin Cities. So all kinds of fun stuff going on at zonecoverage.com. Anyway, today I am joined by one of my favorite prospect writers. You can find him on Baseball HQ. You can find him on Twitter at C_Blessing. His name is Chris Blessing, and he's joining me on Skype today. How are we doing?
I'm doing pretty good. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it's What was great to find out about you is how close you live in proximity to Chattanooga, where the Twins have their AA farm system club. Obviously a very interesting club for a couple reasons, but we'll ask you some questions about the Lookouts Club as we move forward. I do understand you are heading out on assignment here probably in the next half hour, 45 minutes or so. Who are you checking out tonight?
Tonight I'm checking out the Rome Braves versus the West Virginia Power. Rome, of course, is Atlanta farm system, single A team, and Pittsburgh is the single A affiliate, well, West Virginia is the single A affiliate of Pittsburgh. I'm not necessarily covering anybody on Pittsburgh tonight. I usually talk about teams in the sense of their organization. I usually take away that they're not West Virginia, they're actually Pittsburgh prospects.
Sure.
And I'm also looking at a few of the Rome Braves players. Specifically Christian Pache, who's an outfielder, and I've watched him a few times as in a secondary assignment. Tonight he'll be my primary assignment.
That Braves farm system is kind of fun, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it is. It's pretty packed. Sometimes it makes going to a ballpark and working the Braves hard and enjoyable at the same time, because there's so many prospects to cover.
How many farm teams are there within an hour of your house, or maybe even 100 miles?
Within an hour of my house, there's two. Within 100 miles, we have Gwinnett, which is a Braves AAA team.
My favorite thing about that team is that Tony Schiavone is their play-by-play guy. I'm a huge old wrestling fan, and so I hope someday I can go out on assignment to Rochester when Gwinnett is in town and meet the man, the myth, the legend, Tony Schiavone, because I know the AAA broadcaster for the Twins, Josh Wetzel, and I guess Tony Schiavone is very well liked by the fans out there.
Yeah, supposedly. I have not met him yet. I've only gone to Gwinnett once or twice.
And Andrew Albers is on that
as
team.
You,
former Twins.
Yes, Ozzy Albers, one of my favorite prospects I've ever covered.
Andrew Albers, former Twins left-handed pitcher, is on there too.
Oh, okay.
And Ozzy Albies. Very, very similar names.
Okay, yes.
But Albers throws about 85. Very similar names. And he's Canadian. He's a fun guy.
Oh, okay. All right, awesome.
Yeah, so sounds like you got a lot of fun teams. So within 100 miles, though, you said how many teams are there?
I have them. I have the Tennessee Smokies, which is a Cubs affiliate.
Sure.
And then Rome and Chattanooga. And then beyond that, I can cover some college teams like Georgia Tech, the Vanderbilt team, the Tennessee team. Mm-hmm. And I will also go up to see the Nashville Sounds every so often. I work Asheville occasionally, and I also work the Appalachian League, but that's a little more than 100 miles away.
What's the furthest you'll go to cover a game if you're driving?
Furthest I've been is Bowling Green, Kentucky, which is about 3.5 hours from here.
So about what, 200 miles maybe?
I guess so, yeah.
That's not too bad. So how'd you get into this? Because obviously I think people probably glamorize scouting as more than it is.
Yes.
And that's not to say that it's not a cool thing and that I'm not going to glean a ton of useful information from you. But that probably won't make you all that excited to help me out when I'm not doing that much for you, vice versa. But how did you get into this? Because I know between our previous chats, obviously technology failed us when we tried to record a previous podcast. I know,
yes,
you said Mike Newman was very instrumental. That's a colleague of mine from Fangraphs, and he's done some big things prospecting on his own. But you know, what got you into the game first and foremost and then into scouting?
Yes. All right. Well, you know, I always grew up a baseball fan. I grew up Central Jersey partially and partially in Southern Arizona. I grew up a New York Mets fan. Fast forward several years, I started following some New York Mets prospects with the Savannah Sand Gnats. And when I was there, I would just, you know, make observations like anybody else. Okay, this guy's good. This guy's good. Hey, here's one guy that's better than anybody's talking about. So I actually had talked to Mike at a website called MetsGeek.com, and so I sent him a Twitter message about this guy. One thing led to another. I ended up going to see this guy pitch, basically, you know, for free. Mike was able to leave a ticket for me. And next thing you know, about a year later, I'm writing for Mike. I'm doing work for him. He's teaching me the basics. And through the years, I kind of followed him until he went into retirement 2 years ago.
Now, I've talked to you about the Southern League a few times here via email back and forth. You've told me, though, that the league is very weak. The numbers bear that out. Offensively, there's like one team hitting. Everyone else is not hitting very well. And then pitching-wise, though, there's a lot of teams with 3-point-something ERAs and then one team that's kind of off the radar a little bit. What makes the Southern League particularly weak this year, in your opinion?
Well, the first thing is we've had a lot of prospects in the last 2 or 3 years come through. Last year and the year before wasn't as strong for the South Atlantic League, but you look at it this year, and South Atlantic League's one of the biggest, busiest venues for me right now. I'm there all the time. The Southern League is just going through a quiet spell, and specifically, it's affecting the hitting, the lineups. As you guys know, Nick Gordon is one of the better prospects in your organization. Some people have him one, some people have him two.
Mm-hmm.
I've covered 5 teams so far, and he is the only 50 or 55 grade hitter that I could say for sure that he's 55 that I've scouted. The only other one that comes close is a Brewers prospect, Mauricio Dubon, who's another shortstop. And that's it. I scouted Mobile for the first series, and I was there sitting there with Scout while we're doing batting practice. And I just looked at him, and I was like, I can't even put a 4 on any of these guys.
Man.
He showed me his sheet. He hadn't put a 4 on one of their hitters.
Wow.
That's an Angel farm system, by the way. Not the strongest farm system, but even
sure,
the strong farm systems, even the Braves lineup, Travis DeMeritt was probably the only one that really stuck out on the Mississippi Braves team. And, you know, as we just kind of talked about, the Braves have a pretty stacked farm system. There's just not the hitters this year in the league.
That just stands out to me in that the double A level is supposed to be the one that's kind of prospect heavy. Do you think it's just kind of a blip on the radar as far as we're concerned with level of talent in that area right now, especially the Southern League?
Yeah, it definitely is. For instance, a lot of teams don't like to use AAA as a to test their prospects. That's usually a step later. The White Sox have sent pretty much all of their good prospects, except for Michael Kopich, to AAA this year. None of them started in AA. They left Zach Collins in high A. A lot of people believed he was going to be in AA to start the season. So, like, there were things that happened like that. I get to see Pensacola in the next series, which is a Reds organization, Reds farm system, and they also left some guys in high A that would have been interesting bats like Chad Long that I could have covered. So there was a lot of that this season.
So you saw the 2015 Southern League MVP race, or at least some of it, with Orlando Arcia, brother, a younger brother of former Twin Oswaldo, who's toiling in the Reno on the Reno team in AAA in the PCL for Arizona. But up against Max Kepler, who's obviously up and doing some pretty good things with the Twins. What did you think of each of those guys that season, and what do you think of them now as they are young players kind of finding their way in the big leagues?
Well, Orlando Arcia was kind of a known commodity to the prospect community.
Sure.
While Max Kepler really wasn't. Kepler had struggled the previous few seasons, kind of getting his footing, you know, coming from Germany. That's a big adjustment. Not saying that Arcia didn't make the adjustment coming here as well, but the culture is a lot different for a German player. And he just started putting it together, Max Kepler. I had scouted him with Mike Newman in 2012 in Elizabethton, and we were amazed. We liked him. We thought he was the second best prospect on that team. Of course, we didn't see Berrios when we were down there, but this is a team with Byron Buxton, Nico Goodrum, Jorge Polanco, Travis Harrison. There's a lot of really good prospects. Adam Brett Walker. A lot of, toolsy guys in a rookie ball team. So, I mean, he stood out as the second best prospect on that team, but he was really raw. Arcia, who I had seen in the 2014 season, was a player that was still, you know, relatively very young and very raw as well. The difference is Arcia had a position at the time.
Sure.
He's a shortstop. Kepler, they weren't quite sure where he was going to be. Center, left, right, first base. They had him play a lot of first base that year that he won the MVP. The difference between those two is while Arcia had a higher ceiling and was still kind of struggling with dealing with the breaking ball while he was in the Southern League, he was raking against the fastball. Mainly approach and mainly some issues with just over-aggressiveness, what you expect from young hitters.
Of course.
And with Kepler, he was a lot more complete. Not as high of a ceiling, but his floor was higher. And what we saw a lot of was him using the whole field. He would took advantage of the spacious dimensions of Chattanooga at the left center and deposited plenty of opposite field doubles, sometimes triples out to that part of the field. So he was a more complete hitter. He was doing it more on smarts than you know, all ability, kind of like what Arcia was doing. Long-term, looking at both of those prospects, I mean, you've got solid players. There's still that all-star potential in Arcia that maybe doesn't exist in Kepler, where Kepler's more of a solid contributor to your team, somebody that is a cog on a ship as opposed to, you know, a potential superstar like Orlando Arcia.
I feel like Kepler could be a 15, 18, maybe 20 home run guy at his peak.
Yes.
35, 40 doubles. And those guys don't grow on trees, frankly. And especially since they basically pulled him out of thin air in Germany and turned him into a very nice player. I think he'll go as far as whatever his ability at the plate against lefties is. But he's a nice player, don't get me wrong.
Yeah, he is. And he is. He's a very solid player. He's actually somebody that I usually, and I did at the time, tout as a good acquisition in fantasy baseball, because he can essentially, you know, stuff your line score. And those type of hitters are rare, to be able to give you some home runs, giving you some stolen bases. I don't know how he's doing in the major leagues with that right now. But he gave you a little bit of everything with a high average and the ability to walk. For me, I know, being a fantasy player for over 10 years, they're the hard guys to find. And when you find them, you just hold on to them. I think a good comp to, like, if he really develops as he goes along, because, you know, the learning curve is different for somebody from Europe. He could be an Alex Gordon type fantasy player with the amount of doubles and types of home runs. I mean, Alex Gordon was one of the hottest guys in fantasy for three or four seasons before the last couple seasons have kind of robbed some of that.
So you told me off the air that I think Jorge Polanco kind of wormed his way into your heart. What went into that, and, you know, what is your impression of him in the future? Because I've dubbed him Lo Natural. I don't know if it's supposed to be El Natural or Lo Natural, but the natural, because literally everything he does on the field looks good. You know, last year was a little rough when he was trying to work through some things at short as far as, you know, his arm strength wasn't up to speed. But, boy, he looks really, really good this year, and you've known of him for quite some time.
Yes. He was on that 2012 team. He was a guy that we identified very quickly as somebody no one maybe outside of the Twins organization has heard of in prospect media, and somebody that had the tools to be a major league player. His ceiling was a lot higher than most guys. As a hitter, all the fundamentals that you see right now were there back in the Appalachian League with Elizabethton. My memory of him was just kind of slapping hits through the 5-6 hole and pulling the ball between the 3-4 hole, and then surprising you by my driving something to the gaps. Defensively, he was a second baseman at the time. Nico Goodrum was playing short for them, and he was just solid. Nothing really spectacular. Everything was solid. He was a very solid prospect. Fast forward to Chattanooga, and he was now playing shortstop most of the time. Mm-hmm. He had serious issues at that point with his throwing arm. The instructors almost daily were working on him with him on footwork. They didn't see it as something with arm strength. They saw it as poor footwork. And to his credit, he worked very hard, and he has made it look natural. But there's a lot of work involved to get to that point.
Do you think he's a 45 or a 50 right now as far as future value or present-day value?
I had him more as a 45.
Okay.
I think that the fact that he's shown that he's willing to work, I know that sounds funny that major leaguers aren't willing to work. It's not that they're not willing to work. It's more that it's hard when you've been good at something your whole life to kind of change these behaviors. I mean, I go back to a pitcher in the Braves organization, Tuki Toussaint, who they totally reworked his motion last year, and it was a mess for half the season. He was had a 5 ERA, everybody was hitting. He looked like a 40 pitcher. Now, I talked to a scout the other day who says he's a 50-55 guy.
Wow.
Those guys, those heady guys that understand for them to be successful at the major leagues, they have to listen to coaching and they have to take the coaching and do that and go against the grain like Polanco did and like Toussaint has done in the last year. Those are the guys that are always going to exceed the ceilings that we put on them in scouting.
A player who was recently added to the Twins 40-man roster is Angel Vilma. Eduardo Escobar calls him the silk hand. He is a smaller guy. The bat might be, it might be able to knock the bat out of his hands at the higher levels, but the bat looks better this year than it has at any point so far. Granted, just under 20 games, so it's not like he's played a ton. What do you see as a future for that guy?
First off, he's a 70 defender.
That's amazing. I mean, people lose sight of how great a 70 is at anything.
It's a plus-plus defender. There's very few. I've only scouted one 80 defender at short, and that was Andelton Simmons.
He's a beast.
You're talking about an exceptional defensive player. What makes Angel so such a good player is that he's versatile either, too. Part of it's mostly because Nick Gordon's there to play shortstop for the Chattanooga Lookouts. But he's been able to show ability to move around the infield. He has enough arm at third. He has the arm at shortstop. He can, at third base, he seems to be a player that reacts very well. Scouting third base is a lot different than that scouting the middle infield. You're looking for reactions at third base. When people just assume that a player can just go over to third base because they're good at second or short, that's not the case. Travis DeMeritt, one of the best defensive second basemen I've ever seen. I've seen him play shortstop. He's looked terrible. His reactions at third were a position that you need those reactions to be spectacular, just not good. Angel has those, can react. As for his bat, he's not the strongest guy in the world, obviously. Mm-hmm. He tends to a lot of hard ground contact. There's not a lot of hard air contact, which is good for a guy gets a board like that. But like, there's no chance right now for him to really sneak up on anybody and pound the ball over their head. So I kind of expect some of those numbers to kind of dip when the fielders start to realize when it gets around the league that he's not the strongest hitter in the world. I have him scouted as a 35, 40 hit. Mm-hmm. I think it could be more than that. But I would like to see some strength first, because that's hard. I think he would be exposed in a regular role in the major leagues going forward, like, let's say, 2 or 3 years from now, and let's say he doesn't improve. He'll man the position probably at a replacement level for a year or for like 3 weeks or so. But more than that, that's going to be exposed, and it's not going to end pretty.
So, of these three guys, who do you think has the most likely MLB future? Edgar Corsino, Travis Harrison, and Lamont Wade?
A lot. Lamont Wade right now has slider speed bat. But there's few adjustments that he'll be making, I'm sure. Sure, Javier Valentin will make some adjustments on that. But he's the best athlete of the group. He's passing the Twins and Twins, because they are, they've got the muscle memories usually. They've got the ability to mold, as opposed to a guy like maybe Travis Harrison, whose days have been a lot better than they are right now.
And as far as Corsino, I mean, are you a fan of him?
I like he is limited in his abilities. I think that he's not. I don't see him as a long-term major leader. Trying to think of a good word for it. He's more than an organizational guy, but he's less than a guy that you're really counting on in the organization. I don't know what the word is for that.
Sure, that makes sense. You mentioned Nico Goodrum. I've become more of a fan of him moving forward. He's now at AAA Rochester, kind of playing all over. Do you think he's got a utility future in the league? Is, not a guy that can play short necessarily, but maybe the corners?
Yes, I actually spoke with a scout last week about him. The scout actually turned him into his organization since Goodrum was a minor league free agent. The Twins gobbled him up. It was a smart thing. Some guys just, their tools come together late. That's why you don't give up on toolsy hitters, especially like Goodrum. He had a strong throwing arm. He had some power in his frame. He had a very loose swing. His issue was he was very unrefined. And what ended up happening was it just took longer for him to develop those skills. Mm-hmm. Some of those types never discover those skills. The big thing for him is he's bulked up a little. He's probably moved himself off of shortstop. He wasn't the greatest defender there anyway. He has solid reactions at third. I wouldn't say they're good or great. He has the arm for third. He has plenty of arm. He has the arm for short. He has the arm for left. He might even have an arm for right. The thing is I don't know if he sustains himself as a starting player. I think he's a guy that's a great tool in like a super utility role where he may get 2 or 3 starts a week, mm-hmm. Primarily against right-handed pitching.
Do you think Zach Granite has a future as a left fielder, or is he more of a fourth for you?
He's a fourth or a fifth outfielder for me. He's a grinder. I hate to use that cliche.
Well, I've heard,
I've heard Billy Burns
comparisons. Is that pretty apt?
Yeah, I think so. I think that's a fair.
I know you guys kind of probably don't like comparisons, but just for people that are maybe...
Well, it's funny. I like comparisons, but it has to be on players that I've seen.
Sure.
And so, like, Zach Granite reminds me of a few prospects that actually never made it even to AA or AAA. But that doesn't mean that I, you know, he's the success story and they might be the failures.
Sure.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
That's how I look at guys. Like, I was talking just, I wrote an article this week about a Yankees prospect named Estevan Florial. And there's a lot of different conclusions. The bat speed is the fastest I've seen. But wow, the swing is different every time. And so when I use comps to guys that I saw on single A that were just like that. The success story is Nomar Mazara of the Texas Rangers. The failure might be Jose Vinicio, who was a Red Sox prospect who's now a White Sox minor leaguer in AAA, not doing that well. And then that guy that's still trying to do it might be Wilma Becerra, who's a Mets prospect. So I comp guys based on things I see. So the guys that I comp Granite on are guys that no one's ever really heard of that I saw in single A that had kind of a slappy approach at times and kind of learned how to handle pulling pitches and stuff. And that's what essentially he was able to do. He puts his speed, which is 75-80 grade speed, to work for him. And, you know, keep the ball on the ground. But the difference between him and somebody like Angel, who we were talking about earlier, is he'll power up occasionally to hit that ball in the gap and get the triple. It's harder to defend a type like that. But still, I just don't see, you know, he's a 40-grade player in my eyes, and that's a below-average player.
To me, you were an outspoken advocate of Nick Turley. I don't know if you saw today, he was moved up to AAA Rochester. I don't know if he'll start or work out of the pen there. He's been doing a little of both with the lookouts. You told me he could maybe even help the Twins in the big leagues right now in the bullpen. What do you think is a good future role for him? Granted, he's 27 and will be 28 before too long.
Yeah, Nick and I, or another scout and I, have been talking about Nick Turley a lot lately. We both like him a lot. We think that that he's a guy that you kind of need to catch the lightning in the bottle just in case it's not true. Last year he was at, I think, AA for the Yankees. I'm not 100% sure where he got released from. He got released and went to independent ball. Before he got released, and one of his contacts had him 85-87. He has had some arm issues. I don't know if that was the cause. I don't know if it was a mechanical correction. But the pitcher I see right now is a completely different pitcher. Throwing 90-95 consistently. The thing with him is he does not have the command that you would want out of a starting pitcher. His biggest tool is his fastball movement. And so it's fairly unpredictable. He has some deception in his delivery. It's hard to pick up the ball out of his hands. He hides the ball extremely well. But the thing is, he's a cross-arm thrower. And if your viewers don't know what a cross-arm thrower is, it's somebody who doesn't really step straight to home plate. When you step straight to home plate, your momentum, your arm, it's more in sync than really any other way. I mean, and a lot of guys, especially lefties, they're cross-armed. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's not, depending what kind of role they play. And so, kind of do it. Here's the step on that. On double A, they don't pick up on that. But in the major leagues, as you know, and I'm sure you guys have had several pitchers come through the Twins organization that had command issues, eventually they catch up to that kind of stuff. He has a breaking ball. Sometimes it looks like a plus pitch. It's 74 to 78 miles per hour. Sometimes it has really sharp 12-6 bite. Sometimes it's loopy. Third pitches aren't really as needed for left-handed hitters. You can or left-handed pitchers. You can think of guys like Eric Bednarik. There's others out there that I'm missing right now that were essentially two pitchers in their primes. His changeup is a 30-grade pitch. It's very flat, and I see that pitch. And if I have the skills of even double-A players, I'm gonna try to put a swing on that and hit it over the fence. So really, essentially, he's a two-pitch pitcher, and he doesn't have great command. So to me, that's a reliever. Talking to that scout, he looked on Twins roster, and he was like, there's at least three guys that Nick should be pitching over right now. Sure. I don't know who those guys are. I didn't ask questions. But, I mean, I trust this guy's opinion. He's a long-term contact of mine. He's very well-regarded in the game. So yeah, we both love him. And I know almost every scout that I've talked to that saw him so far this year just loves what they're seeing.
Are you a Trevor Hildenberger fan?
Yes, I am. I actually only got like an inning or two from him last year. But it's a funky delivery, and it works for him. The thing that I'm amazed at by him is that he's a guy that has command with that delivery. It's very unorthodox, and, you know, to me, that's a successful reliever right there. Bringing in some funk and being able to command your pitches. You see a lot of relief pitchers unable to command their pitches. That's why some of these failed starters have become relievers, because that's the best path they have in the major leagues. But in his case, he doesn't rely on a lot of velocity. And I didn't have him, I think, over maybe 90, mm-hmm. 91. But that was pre-injury. I kind of threw that one out there. But yeah, I mean, phenomenal chance of being a solid middle reliever.
What's going on with Cole Stewart right now? He's just a mess.
Cole is one of those players that I actually haven't seen him this year. I don't want to say, but it was really funny. The opening day, they had a live remote on TV, and it was down the third baseline. And I joked with my fiance that, hey, let's scout him from here. Let's see if he's rushing the home plate. And just from that shot, I was able to see that he's not as compact as maybe he needs to be. My thing is I think at one time he might have had more stuff than he has right now. Mm-hmm. He does not have an out pitch for me. I compared him recently, and I think he's a better version of it, but there was a Dodgers prospect named Zach Lee, who is a first-round pick, highly touted out of Georgia High School, and he just never put it together. I think he's seen some starts with the Padres this year, but, you know, any arm is going to probably pitch for the Padres
this year
if they're at least triple-A quality. So, you know, I think he's a better. When you don't have an out pitch, how are you going to get out major league hitters? If you can't get them to swing through something, you've got to either amp up your velocity. You've got to either be somebody who isn't seen as much, and that's where these guys, these failed starting prospects, end up in the bullpen.
Are you big on Todd Van Steensel? The numbers are good right now.
You know, I mean, he's 99.3. Sometimes he gets it up there higher than that. He's more of a solid org arm. I think that he has limited ceiling. When I've seen him, he's had commanding the pitch. to his pitches, especially his fastball. To me, he's not one of the guys that I'm excited about.
Okay, so Mason Mellitakis and Nick Birdie are off to very good starts. What do you make of them? Are they big-time relief prospects for the Twins?
I've been on Mason since I first saw him last season, battling back from his arm injuries and stuff. I like him. I have a warm place in my heart for guys with from the left side that sink the ball. He does a really good job. Last year, he struggled at times repeating his delivery, which is expected from a guy who had missed the season. My thinking right now is I haven't really seen the breaking ball pop yet. I've heard that it is it's a good pitch. I just haven't really seen the development yet. I've only scouted him one game this season. For whatever reason, I've been getting the same relievers and the same starters every game.
And then the last person.
Oh, and then sorry.
Birdie, yeah, Nick Birdie.
Nick Birdie, I forgot about that.
Nick Gordon, Nick Birdie.
Nick, I would say, saw him in 2015. Nick had a very straight fastball. There was no depth to it. Throwing high 90s, trying to speed the ball past guys. The curve had gotten a little sloppy. It still showed some plus potential. He's still getting some swings and misses, but it was sloppy. I have lots up there. This year I've seen him twice. In both cases, he's been sitting more in the mid-90s. He has touched 98, but I actually like him more as a pitcher that pitches in the 93 to 96 range. He has more control of his pitches. While his fastball doesn't have much depth, it still has some depth at that velocity. And being able to even have just a smidge more command has enabled his curveball to kind of take off this season. Hitting mark just a little bit like they've done in the past. He looks healthy. I know that was a question mark last year. I think he only pitched 3 games. I might have that wrong. To me, he's probably the most of the relievers, the true relievers on that team right now. He's the one I'd get the most excited about.
This is the last thing I'll ask you before we let you go and get on the road. Do you think Nick Gordon is going to push Jorge Polanco over to second base, or do you think it'll be vice versa?
You know, I don't know. I did some research last night. I watched it was a win against the Tigers. And I saw Polanco, and I thought that his throwing arm was a lot better than I ever even imagined.
Mm-hmm.
I had told you earlier in an email that I kind of gave Nick Gordon the edge at second base, just given that he had the stronger arm. Polanco has a little more range, and one of the things with Polanco is his range. When he gets to the ball, he gets the ball. He makes the play. Kind of reminds me of Estrubel Cabrera of the Mets.
Sure.
Not plus range. People kind of dog Cabrera's range. But every play that he's supposed to make, he makes. And that's – I'd rather have that at shortstop than somebody who might range a little further, but might make a few more mistakes. The thing that Gordon has is he has the throwing arm. He also has the better other tools, too. He can hit, you know, he can do that kind of stuff. So, I could see either. Work for him. Like, come on.
All right, he's Chris Blessing. You can find him on Twitter at @C_Blessing. I want to thank you for joining us, and enjoy your trip.
Thank you.
All right, we'll have you on again real soon. You've been listening to Midwest Swing, part of the Cold Omaha Podcast Network.